I guess with regards to my opening remarks, always, I think when you talk about these things, we need to talk about the fact that this particular virus is considered to be a very low risk for humans. We've been working very closely with the Health and Human Services and Centers for Disease Control. It's not a food safety risk, so people should not be concerned about that. We have an excellent surveillance system in the United States. But I think it's also important to note how did this virus really get here? Well, this particular virus, H5N2, is a reassortment from an H5N8. The H5N8 is a highly pathogenic avian influenza virus that actually came out of Europe and Asia. It's related to the original H5N1 virus that was in Asia, if you might remember, quite a few years ago, that you saw some human illness to. So that virus, the H5N8, has found a way to be adapted to wild waterfowl, basically dabbling ducks, and it doesn't kill them. So for the first time, we've seen this high-path AI virus move around the flyways of the world. If you remember back, there was always concern from the H5N1 moving through the flyways. Well, it didn't. It may have moved through local flyways for a little while, but it doesn't move from like Euro-Asian flyways into the North American flyways. And it wouldn't believe that it ever would because it didn't adapt itself to ducks. So basically, even though ducks would get it and could pass it and fly short distances, they didn't survive long periods and long distances. So this one has adapted. So it's gone into the Asian flyways around South Korea when we first saw it this past year. And now it's in the North American flyways. And it's that H5N8 that now has reassorted with North American low-path AI strains. And now we have an H5N1 North American, actually it's a Euro-Asian North American strain, and an H5N2, which is causing us all the problems, which is a Euro-Asian North American strain. And it's H5N2 that has also apparently adapted itself to these same dabbling ducks, which may or may not continue to see for a period of time. I know you've heard different estimates about how long we might see it. Well, nobody really knows. They're really guesses. I mean, we may not see it this next fall, or we may. I think most of the experts believe we will see it at least through this next fall and into the spring, but it's a guess. So until something kind of overtakes it or it mutates or another low path becomes the predominant virus in these ducks, you'll see it. So the other important part is biosecurity that we've had in the U.S. has been very good for being able to address high-path and low-path AI of the past. But we have to think about this differently now. If that virus is present in the wild waterfowl, you have to look at all of these wild waterfowl as a potential of contamination into your facilities, and you have to treat it as such. So you've got to do things that you may not have done before to ensure that this does not get into your facilities, like the storage of feed. Can't be out in the open. If you have feed being spilled on the ground when you have feed trucks fill up bins, you're going to have to pick that feed up and clean it up because all of those things can attract waterfowl, especially in areas. Now, not if waterfowl are not in the area, obviously, but in areas like Minnesota, when, you know, the state of, what is it, 10,000 lakes, just thousands of lakes, all of these facilities are very close to large bodies of water. I think the furthest facility, or all of the facilities that we've found in Minnesota, are within about 325 yards of a large body of water. And that's a risk. And it's taking extra steps that you've never had to take before with regards to your environment. It's not the issue of whether you consider your environment clean, especially, you know, these houses usually have an outer perimeter fence to keep people out, to keep trucks out, keep visitors you don't want out, and to keep people in that belong there that go through cleaning and disinfection. Well, now you have to consider what's inside that fence, with inside that environment, to be contaminated. And you have to treat every individual house as a biosecure unit. And even then, it's risk because of issues like winds. Now, this virus doesn't usually travel long distances in winds. It's not usually considered to be quote-unquote aerosolized. But I've seen there's 20 to 40 mile an hour winds in these areas, and large dust move, feathers move. So any kind of dirt, dust, feathers can carry virus. And a lot of these turkey operations have curtains that they can raise and lower to in order to control the temperature within these houses. And so if they're open to let air in and the winds are high, you have a potential risk of an airborne being moved through the air as a fomite. So all of these things are things we're going to have to address. Now, we should not see a lot of outbreaks during the summer months. I'm not saying you wouldn't see any, but you shouldn't really see very many, and hopefully they'll go to zero, because this virus does not like to be outside the body in hot weather. Ultraviolet rays kill it. If it gets direct sunlight, it's dead. But it does like cold. It does, and it lives for a long time if it's also contained in other products like feces, and that is not, doesn't get to a high enough temperature to kill it. So all of these things are factors we're going to take into account. So we're looking at all of this from a biosecurity standpoint. We're looking at other things that we can do. We have to start kind of thinking about ways, because right now our apportionments that we received thus far from OMB have been about $84 million. Might be a little above that, but it's about $84 million. We've used about $15 million of money we already had. So that's $99 million that we've pretty much already spent. So we need to find ways to be able to address this if it occurs in the fall. So we're looking at vaccine. Agricultural Research Service, David Swain's laboratory, David in Southeast Poultry, they're looking at vaccine development. I don't know if we'll have a vaccine ready by the fall or not, but it's an option. Now, use of vaccine has its pluses and its minuses. On the plus side, if it's a good, efficacious vaccine, you might be able to get these birds through their useful life, for what their purpose is, whether there's egg layers or meat-type birds or whatever. You could use it in high-end birds, the breeding populations, in order to protect them. What you, though, also know is that use of vaccine can actually cover virus presence, and it can be underlying and still and have some virus presence within a population that's vaccinated. Also, you still may have a break in a house that's vaccinated. The other thing is trade. When you use vaccine today, internationally, oftentimes trading partners will cut off your products, except for like cooked product. The U.S. is a major supplier of genetics, poultry genetics around the world. We would not want to do anything to damage our export markets, but at the same time, we need to protect our domestic market as well. So it's a balance of what we do, and probably it'll have to be a wait and see. What I hope is that we can ramp up biosecurity and prevent very many outbreaks or occurrences in the fall if that virus is still a dominating virus in wild waterfowl and we see its introduction again. We've seen it in 3 flyways. And it's likely to be in the Atlantic flyway as well. Ontario has had 3 cases, and while that area is not believed to be a part of the Atlantic flyway, there's crossover between these flyways. There's no line of demarcation between them, and they cross over. So it's if it comes back in the fall, it's likely to be in all 4 flyways. So those are kind of my I'd also like to really commend the states that have been hurt with this, the producer organizations and industry, all of them have been very great to work with us in our incident command structure and the response to this issue. Yes, sir.
Dr. Clicker, the question, is there a reason that this is showing more in turkeys than in broilers? Is it by location or is it something of the breed?
Well, I think part of it's location, but there's more to it than that. It's really also by the breed. Turkeys are, the work that David Swain's lab has done, turkeys have very high mortality from this. They can reach 100% mortality. I think chickens, it's about 60%. And also, the turkeys have ability to easily pass it from bird to bird, where the chickens seem to be a little more resistant to it from that standpoint. So they don't pass the virus as easily from bird to bird. So that doesn't mean it still can't affect broilers, because it can, you know, it can. It's in layers. But I also think right now, where we've had that initial concentration in up in Minnesota, you had large turkey operations. It's the way they're raised, too, from the standpoint of the curtain system. A lot of lakes, a lot of waterfowl wintering. So it was just kind of the perfect, I don't want to say the perfect storm, but the perfect area for this to happen in this situation with these wild waterfowl.